Yeah. Well, good morning, Luke. Welcome to the Happy Mind Project with Carly and myself. And a big thanks for coming on to share your journey. And as we just mentioned before, I've been stalking a little bit about your story and your journey, and it seems to be quite a fascinating one. And certainly not, you know, the common sort of premise of struggles to that total shift of life, and from being a thug and someone that used to enjoy some recreational substances to being quite out there to now shifting and helping others change their lives. It's a pretty cool story, and I love the title, The Stabbed Ego. That's pretty epic, mate. So can you rewind back to because I love hearing fellow troubled soul journeys and back to the early days.
Well, firstly, thanks for having me on your show. I appreciate it. And from 15 to 22, I was the leader of a street fighting gang in Sydney, street fighter and graffiti crew. I weighed nearly 130 kilos.
Holy shit.
Big guy. And it was all Bundy rum and coke. It was no muscle at all. I was stabbed twice. Stabbed in the lung, stabbed in the head, addicted to drugs, alcohol, made my money through stealing, robbing drug dealers, and came close a couple of times to killing other people. So it was just this really heavy ego-based life I was living back then. Heavy.
So can we even go back a little bit further? What was the catalyst for that? Like, what was the, you know, what was the pre-scene to all that?
Growing up, like looking back, I like to, you know, obviously I've broken down a lot myself and just sort of trying to understand what got to that point. And, you know, a couple of things, little things happened. And, you know, a lot of it obviously comes back to our childhood, and our conditioning, our subconscious beliefs, whatever it may be. And when I was younger, my dad and brother were both professional boxers. Yeah. And growing up, and I went to Vegas to watch, my dad was one of Costa Zoo, the fighter's corner man. So I went to Vegas to watch Costa Zoo win his first world title, and I could see the way fighters were respected. And I sort of, you know, they walked differently, and people wanted to speak to them, and people wanted to do things for them. And I suppose as an impressionable kid, I wanted that, but I was just this overweight slob, really, and I wasn't training. I wasn't going to get in the boxing ring at all. So I got into a fight in year seven in front of my brother and all his friends, and I went pretty good. Like, I went all right. Like, it's just this big sort of big guy. I had a fight with somebody in his year who was a bit older, and I won that fight. And from that day, you know, I could see the way I was treated, like as that fighter, and people saw me as a fighter, and people treated me a little bit differently to what they used to. And from there, you know, I just held on to that label and that identity as the fighter, and just ran with it. And it just one step in front of the other, and it just got out of control.
And what was when was the lead into the drugs and alcohol? Was that to sort of, obviously, because you started to feel that void of, oh, I'm feeling pretty good, getting, you know, a bit more respect. And how did that lead into that sort of state?
I was kicked out of school at like 15 for carrying on being, you know, fighting, carrying on, not going. And out of school, I started hanging out with these pretty heavy characters around Sydney, Redfern, Glebe, La Crosse. And these guys were known for organized street fights. So I, you know, proved myself to get into that crew. And then from there, drugs were always around, but I sort of shied away from them. But just hearing about them, seeing them around, and having my first pill, it was the first time in my life for a while, because, you know, going through that stage of my teens and being overweight, I was this bit anxious, bit like depressed, and had a lot of mind chatter like we all do. And except for you guys. And
it's still there.
Yeah. And for me, it was the first time I felt some stillness, like taking that pill, taking that ecstasy. It was the first time I had that sense of, yeah, no thought. And I was just present. I know it sounds heavy, but it was that first time. It was the only way I knew how to deal with it back then. And I saw some heavy things happening. So my addiction to the drugs and alcohol was my way of silencing my frantic thoughts.
Yeah, right.
Numbing what was going on. And just out of interest, Luke, what was family life like for you?
I had a great upbringing. Like, we're pretty poor growing up, like money wise. We're living in housing commission. We had no money, all that sort of stuff. But apart from that, I was still a really happy kid. I had a great upbringing. My mum and dad had so much love for me, so I had a really, really strong upbringing. And I admittedly, my dad was a heavy drinker, a bit of an alcoholic growing up as well. And it wasn't until later in life when he gave up the alcohol and sort of led, because he was always trying to, when I was going through this heavy stage, he was always looking out for me, mate, you got to get off the grog. The grog's killing you. The grog, you know, that's why you're always getting in the trouble. And a lot of it was around the alcohol. But during that time, he was always trying to tell me to stay off the alcohol, but he was getting blind every night as well. So it wasn't until later on in life, he led by example, and it gave me that hope that if he can do it, I can do it. And yeah, so he just led by example, and that was the catalyst for me starting to turn my life around. But back to that, like, it's, I talk about it a lot, like in my talks at like primary schools, high schools, I talk about it a bit, like the main sort of thing about that our childhood, you know, we come in, you guys know this stuff as well. We come into this world and we're this pure, positive, unstoppable being with unlimited potential, happiness, peace, love, whatever you want out of this world, right? This shining star. And just sort of as we go along, it's those maybe a word spoken by a parent or a label, like for me, the fighter, the dumb, the gang member, and then just sort of takes away from that unlimited self. And that was the big cause for my, you know, that my drug addiction as well, is just trying to understand myself, or trying to get away from these thoughts and get back to that true self. But I didn't even know what I was doing back then, you know. So I was just lost.
They're kind of wonderful, like, you know, I think there can be wonderful journeys a lot of those times, because I think that a lot of people that haven't gone through that state of experiencing, okay, that quietness that maybe a drug gave us. And for me, it was a kind of that similar story. Like, my dad used to drink every night and then just say, don't do drugs, you know, and he'd be sitting there polishing off beers, wine, you know, scotch, and saying, don't do drugs. And so for me, it's like, hold on, that kind of doesn't seem to work, because you're doing drugs, right? And so when I got into that, it was kind of like it opened up this whole new world that really didn't know it existed. So when we open those worlds, I think they can also give us that indication that inside, hold on, there is a different way. Because if you never experience that, you just kind of think this is the way my mind always works. So in a way, they can open those doors. And it's not an uncommon story from people that have been down those similar routes that have then gone on to make massive life changes like yourself. So coming back a little bit, when did, from that point of view, how did you, like, because that's a big jump from being, you know, in gangs, beating the crap out of people. Now, when you say street fighting, was that like organized fights, or was that you just go and beat the crap out of, so organized, right? Okay.
Street fights. And I think that in itself was another drug, you know, the adrenaline, the presence of fighting, the one-on-one fight, because while you're fighting, you're not thinking about the outside world. It's just bang, game time, you know. And look, I'm getting sort of goosebumps thinking about it now, you know. Like, it was just this rush of.
Sorry, where does street fighting happen? Does it happen on the street or in like
parks? Parks usually. Parks. So if somebody gets knocked out, they obviously don't kill them when they hit the deck, but. Usually as well, just in the city, we'd run into some rival crews and stuff like that, and it'd just be on. So it was just nonstop. Every couple of days, I was in fights, in brawls, it was heavy. And even the two times I was stabbed, it was my fault. You know, it was self defense. I attacked them, so it was my fault. The guy that when I had the punctured lung. I saw the guy, like, everyone had organized when we saw each other, we're going to fight, but he knew that I was, like, back then I was a better fighter. There was this big, tough guy. And as soon as he saw me coming, he reached down his pants and pulled out and unfolded the knife, like, out of fear, out of whatever. And I had every opportunity to turn around and take off in the other direction. Like, he was probably, I don't know, 20 meters away, but because I was with my boys, he was with a bunch of his, you know, what, back then, this ego, and what we do when we're living in ego, the first step is bang, what are they going to think? Who's that going to think? What are they going to do? And then bang, 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 and then make our decision through that. You know, my whole life was determined by other people's opinions and expectations of me. It was never a thought of what I wanted to do. It was just bang, okay, this is what I'll do. And knowing that my boys would think I was a coward or whatever, I ran straight ahead towards this guy holding a knife, and I was like, go on, then stab me. Didn't think he would. He reaches forward, takes a swipe, or sort of stuck my stomach in. Just catches my shirt. Then realizing he was going to stab me, I jump in and throw a punch. And then he does the same and everything just stopped. And like he was frozen. And I'm standing there and time sort of slowed down. And I felt like paint going down my back. And I look over my shoulder blades.
You're still there, mate? Can you hear us?
Paused.
Coughing up blood, struggling to breathe. And I can hear sirens coming in the background. And I'm thinking, this is it. I'm done, you know, for what? Like, this is for what?
Just what age were you, Luke? What age were
you? I was about 17.
Okay. So you'd be 17. A couple of years by this stage.
And this is when I was at my 17, 18 was at, like, I was a big boy too. Like I was having fights with grown men. I was just a kid, you know, and next thing I know, I'm in Sydney's RPA hospital and nurse tells me it's a punctured lung. My mum's crying, my dad's fuming. And from there it was just like, do you guys want me to keep going with this story?
All right, cool. I told you we just freeform it.
Yeah, so let's do this shit. All right, so 2 weeks into my recovery, I'm sitting at home with my girlfriend, just chilling out. You know what we're like when we're at home? We're sort of ourselves, right? We're just wearing our shitty clothes, just chilling, right? Not worrying about other people. And that's what I was doing. I was just being myself. And then I get a phone call, and it was one of my boys. Like, and as soon as I see like that name come up, the mask comes on, you know, the false self. And I even spoke different. You know, I was like, hey, what's going on? Trying to sound tough, whatever. And you know, I'm just sort of touching on that. I think, you know, we've really got to be conscious of that, because often it doesn't have to be gang life, but it can be any life. It can be a role in when we step into different places or different people. Even if we catch ourselves speaking a little bit different to what we normally speak like, or use words we normally wouldn't use just to fit in with certain people.
That really resonated with me, that what you just said too. Thinking so many different scenarios. So it's interesting. We should come back to that.
Yeah, great. Let's. And I feel if you've obviously got to be a little bit of chameleon to sort of fit into certain roles or whatever, but if what I say to the students, or what I say to different audiences, is like, if you ever feel like you have to, you know, speak a little bit different, hang out with certain people, use words you normally wouldn't use to hang out with certain people, they're not your people.
Yeah.
Now, throughout our life, we adapt our looks, our feelings, our thoughts, our emotions, our words, just to hang out with certain peeps that really aren't our people anyways, right? So,
yeah.
So anyway, so I put that mask on, what's going on? And he said, the guy that stabbed you is at a party on the North Shore in Sydney. He goes, do you want to go get him? And inside my head, I'm like, not really. I'm here with my girl. Life's pretty good here. But again, what's he going to think? Is he going to worry? I'm like, yeah, come get me. So I go into my parents' kitchen. I'm still living at home. And I open up the kitchen drawer, and there's all these knives sitting in the drawer. And I pick up this big knife. I'm standing there holding it. And I'm, you know, that voice, the true self, whatever it may be, our intuition is like, you know, what are you doing? You're going to kill this guy. He's going to be dead. You're going to end up in jail. What am I doing? And I'm like, got to put the knife back down, but you know, that the sort of ego jumps in again. The side, what are the boys going to think? You're a fighter. They're going to think you're a coward, whatever. I'm like, okay, pick the knife back up, put it down the side of my pants. I go out the front. Four of my close boys rock up. Like people I just sort of grew up with, normal people, like just normal kids, normal people, right? I'm getting that car. And we're driving through the city. Nobody was speaking. I felt like nobody was breathing. There was this thick energy in the car, you know, made me nearly sick. And get to the front of this party. And by now, you know, the true self's gone. The boys have tapped me on the back, swearing, let's go, let's get him, let's get him, let's get him. You know, one, I think Eckhart Tolle talks about one ego can be like heavy, but get like the collective ego and the collective energy. And it can be like, it can be both sides. Like get a good collective bunch of people that'll, doing spiritual and good things, and that, and you can go a certain way, but the other way can be deadly, you know, and it was about to be. So I run up to the front of this door and I boot the door in of this party, and I run through screaming, where is he? Screaming at the top of my lungs, throwing his friends on the floor. And, you know, on the outside, it looked like I was looking for him, but on the inside, I'm going like, please don't be here. I don't want this guy to be here, you know? please. And after about 2 minutes, it felt like 2 hours. It was like, it's not here. It's not here. I leave and I find out, no kidding, the guy I was looking for was using the toilet inside the party.
Wow.
How good's that?
He was in the toilet when I kicked the front door in and stayed in there. And I'm actually not friends with that guy now, like all these years later, but we when I was on Facebook, we like each other's photo. He nearly killed me, but now we're all cool.
That's amazing. And are any of your mates, any of the mates that you were in the car with in prison?
One of them, yes. Yep. The other two are doing okay, and one's, to be honest, he's not doing the best. Yeah. But yeah, but looking back on that car, none of us wanted to be in there, you know, like if each of us just sort of pulled back, like everyone was just jumping off each other and just worrying about what each other thought, really.
Just all got stuck in the story.
Sorry?
All got stuck in the story.
Yeah, so true.
Luke, did your girlfriend know what you were off to do that night?
She could see what was up, like that the boys would call me, and she... I met my girl at that time. We were together for like 6 years. And when I met her, she was just this, she's still a beautiful soul. Everybody is. However, you know, you are your environment. You are who you hang with. And my crew, myself and her, like she started changing as well. She was carrying on. She was fighting. She was like, yeah, just living a heavy existence after a while as well. Like it was, yeah. So she knew what was up, but I don't know what it was back then or what it is now, but I still see it now. But a lot of the girls that we're hanging out with, you know, thought it was like looked up to the macho sort of stuff back then. And I don't know if it was their idea of wanting to be protected or that they just thought that by being with us, they were somebody, you know, it was just interesting seeing that, like, just that, yeah, the people we used to get, like us guys back then, we're terrible to people, terrible to guys, to girls. And yeah, it was just, I don't know, we all had girlfriends though that thought the world of us and would have done anything for us, really.
Mm. Collective pain body experiences, I suppose.
Yeah, well said.
And I guess finding that belonging, you know, and feeling like we're part of something, and you know, we're all in a way searching for some kind of connection. And if you can find that and find people that have got your back and do anything for you, it's pretty powerful. And especially if you've come from that space from inside where, like a lot of us have, where those feels like, you know, as you said, from those anxious inside, you've got the tough exterior, but inside we're going, what's really going on? Holy crap. Yeah. Holy crap. God, I hope he's not here, but I'm going to kill him. I know. No, it's crazy. But let's shift gears. So how did it come that, you know, as you said, that inner voice, you know, and I think, you know, maybe not all of us, but, you know, there's certainly some cases of, you know, I guess you might call them, you know, total unempathetic psychopaths. But for most of us, I think we've got that little bit of a true north. There's that voice that's just going, you know, really? Is this really you? Come on. But yet the ego can cloud that so much. So how did it come when you actually decided to shift gears? And how did that start to look? Because obviously changing from that environment you're in, there must have been some steps involved, and what were some catalytic moments that drove that?
Yeah. Just touching on that, you're right. Like this, it doesn't matter how tough or how whatever it may be, you know, everyone knows right from wrong. Everyone's got that true self deep inside, you know, that it's just buried away. And I saw that with some of my boys, like even guys that were doing heavier stuff, like guys that were doing hurting people, like some heavy stuff. But when they're alone or after a, you know, bender or after when they'd open up to me, you know, they had those same thoughts as well, that same deep down thoughts of wanting to get away from it even, you know. But again, just that condition, that the ego, that identity, because who, without my boys, without this big identity, who am I, you know, and that sort of scared them even more than what was going on inside. So yeah, you're right, 100% you're right with that, because we all know, yeah, deep down, right from wrong, but unfortunately some just push it aside. Sorry, what was the question after that?
So where was how did that sort of catalyst come from, going from, you know, because change, as we know, is a pretty challenging thing, especially if you're stuck in that environment. How did you go from being, you know, Luke then to Luke now?
It wasn't just like a, this answer probably changes every time. Like, I watch a few different videos, it's probably different every time because there's so many different answers to it, to be honest. There's, you know, I just the heaviness, the struggle, the darkness of the nights after the drugs, after the, like, the alcohol was the worst for me, to be honest. Like, the drugs, like, don't get me wrong, they're not a good thing, but the alcohol was the worst drug I feel there is, the alcohol. And all that stuff, like the heaviness of it all, I just wanted better, I suppose, but just didn't know how. And I saw some heavy things. Like I said, I saw a friend drop dead in front of me off one pill. I saw a friend get run over by a train right in front of me as well. It was this heavy existence. I was nearly sent to jail a couple of times. And like all that sort of stuff, I suppose, sort of built up on each other, but that sort of added to the identity as well, the ego of all the victim mentality, it just sort of added to it. So it wasn't that. The big thing that changed it around, like there's a couple of things that got to that. I did start my boxing. I started getting to boxing. I got a job, started working, got a bit of discipline. And with that, starting to feel better about myself. I started losing some weight. And a friend of mine who I grew up with, who wasn't in the crew, who I sort of used to play cricket with and hang out with, he was always like planting little seeds, I suppose, during that time. And just trying to pull me out and remind me of who I was. So was my dad, always trying to remind me of who I was. And my dad's a friend of my dad who I really looked up to, an Aboriginal man. He's passed away now. He was a big mentor of mine growing up. I don't know why, but I wasn't reading back then. I don't know why, but he gave me a book, The Way of the Superior Man.
Such a good book.
No. Sorry. That's the book I'm reading. That's the book I'm reading now. Sorry. We'll get to that in a second. But the book that changed it was Superior Warrior.
The Way of the Peaceful Warrior.
Way of the Peaceful Warrior. The Way of the Peaceful Warrior.
Yeah. Awesome book.
Yeah. Right. But we'll get to The Superior Man as well. That's a cracker of a book too. But anyway, so he gave me that book, right? And I read a few pages of it and it started talking about the universe and going, and I was like, what's this shit, you know? And I had like no idea about any spirituality. Like I was just, this is rubbish. And my friend who I grew up with, he was always talking about, look, trusting in the universe and all these sort of stuff, right? And so I go to him, I'm like, brother, you got to read this book. It's a cracker, you know, like bullshitting that I read it. And so he read the book. And that Christmas, he gives me a gift. He goes, man, you like that book. I've got a gift for you, man. This is going to, and he gave me the book, The Power of Now. So me getting The Power of Now came out of a lie, right? and reading The Power of Now, I for you, we've all read it, I suppose, us spiritual mofos out there, we've all read or looked at Eckhart stuff. And the first few chapters, again, no idea what was going on, like with the book. So I brushed it. Then 6 months later, whatever, when I was getting into my boxing, getting into, you know, looking after myself, I picked it back up and changed my whole life.
Game changer. Yeah.
Change everything. And it just made me realize about the false self, you know, because like you said earlier, we think that's who we are. We don't see a difference. We haven't experienced the separation between the two, right? Of our true soul and the false self. And when I was this thug, this fighter, that's who I thought I was, you know, but it was just this mask, this facade that I was living up to. And it wasn't until I got this connection, I could start getting rid of labels, stop worrying about what the boys thought about me. But then, you know, it wasn't just like the clouds opened up. I'd stop getting on it for a while, but then I'd fall back in, stop getting off it for a while, then I'd fall back in. And it was just this long process. And eventually, yeah, it's from there, Eckhart, and just kept continuing with my spiritual development, got right into my boxing, turned it around spiritually, emotionally, physically, and just committed every single day to bettering myself.
And when did the book come about? Like, what was the, sorry, my cat's just pushing the computer up and down. When did the book come about? So obviously you went through that journey and I think that's, again, it was a very hard question to answer, is what is the catalyst? Because it's, you know, as you said, it's not like it's one single defining moment that alters our life. For sometimes it can be like, you know, but you look at those little lead ups that came to even the fact that we fabricated the story to feel something. But then if you didn't do that, then that wouldn't have shifted to, you know, you wouldn't have got the power now. So all those beautiful little seeds of synchronicity that come into it. And then that journey onwards. And I think that's the thing that, because I think a lot of people, I think for a lot of us, change can be challenging because especially when we're stuck in that environment to step out, it is that process and progress along the way. And at what point did you then go, okay, this is worth sharing? Like, what was the story behind the unfolding of the book?
Friend of mine, actually, I read a book called Shantaram.
Yeah, a great book.
Yeah, crack of a book. And just the way he sort of described things and just the way his writing style, and a really good friend of mine ended up going to jail. And I sent him a book, so he read the book and we started writing back to each other, and he suggested that not to pass time, but just to get our creative flow going, that he'd send a word across and then we'd have to include this word in sort of like a short story. So we started playing this game. Now I started writing this stuff and I'm like, well, I got it right. You know, like, I think I got it right as a writer. And then I started mentoring a lot of kids as well around, because I was owning a gym. I started the gym with my then wife. And we started a business together and I started mentoring a lot of kids because parents heard about my story and I was speaking to kids. And I found I could... got a really good connection with these guys, and I could create some good change. And I was like, you know, I've got to get, love to get my story out there more because I can't speak to 1,000 kids at once, right? And not only kids, but adults as well. I was doing the same thing, and so I started writing short stories of just my life. And again, I think it was a bit of false confidence or whatever it is. I was like, I think I'd go all right. So I posted some on an author forum, thinking I'm an author now, right? And I couldn't wait for all these authors to go, how good he is and all this sort of shit. And so I posted it and they all shot me down. Your grammar's terrible, your story. They were sending me links to writer's courses and all this sort of stuff. Like, okay, I guess I'm no good. But, you know, I kept writing, and about a month later or something, a lady who read my, an editor from Melbourne, she read the stuff that I posted on the author forum. She inboxed me. She goes, look, I saw your story. You know, you do need some help with your structure, but you've got some really good depth to your writing. You know, I'd love to help you out and maybe mentor you through your book.
Wow.
And it just goes to show, when you put yourself out there to possible ridicule or whatever and just keep stepping, things open up, right? And now from that, then it was like, talk about a silent mind, like, and doing things from soul. When I was writing, it was like hours and hours and hours went past and it was just complete presence. And I'm so passionate about this because I love my writing now, you know, and it's one of my favorite parts of my life at the moment, is just my writing. And again, just go on the show. When you put yourself out there, things open up.
Yeah. That must have been, hats off to taking those brave steps to cop a few back on the chin. And, you know.
Yeah. Even from the boys, like I had certain things. I'm like, how are some of the boys going to take this? You know, like, and I had those doubts, but I just kept spilling it out. Obviously, you know, I had to be careful with certain things, but just kept spilling it out. And like there has been mixed reports by some of the boys, some of the old crew that I don't really speak to. I've heard down the grapevine, some people aren't happy. Other people love it. Like, so, you know, it's my story. It's my perspective. You know, we've all got our own perspectives of things, you know, and so I was just spilling it for myself, and other people's opinions don't bother me at all anymore. You know, I still got to be careful. I don't want to hurt other people 100%.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it's coming from a good place, then I'm going to do it.
Yeah. That's inspiring, you know. I think a lot of people can relate to that, because often people are scared to share because of their story does involve others. And, you know, I think it's just very, you've got to have integrity and, you know, be mindful and graceful about how you deliver your story, that it's not with intent to hurt others. And, that also resonates.
People do, because it doesn't matter what you do, if you're going to offend somebody somewhere, it doesn't matter what you're going to do. It doesn't matter if you're coming from the most beautiful space ever and somebody's going to take it their wrong way, or somebody had a shit morning. So there's always going to be people that are going to take it wrong or whatever. But as long as you deep down know in your heart that's coming from a good space, bang, go for it.
So as this concept is that kind of the thought around the happy mind, what were some of the things that were really important for you, as you said, to silence that because it sounded like, again, you came from being where that concern of others and that judgment and what would they think, to cultivating that powerful perspective of self where you're not relying upon that. What tools and techniques and things have you done to be able to arrive at that place where now that noise, if it is there, it's not heard or it's not really even there?
Shut up heaps. It's definitely gone. Like, it's good. Yeah. It pops up every now and again. But it's the tools I use was, first of all, like, for, I was actually reading a section in a book this morning as well, which sort of highlights this point about, you know, a lot of our advancements spiritually, physically, whatever it is, it's, we're always looking to do certain things or, you know, read certain things, do certain courses. But a lot of the stuff first has to come back to the unlearnings of the old shit, the stuff that we have to stop doing, you know?
Yeah.
And like there's all these tools that are beautiful, and that without them, I wouldn't be where I am now. But first I had to get rid of the shit that wasn't serving me, you know? And even stuff like TV, I don't watch TV anymore. Not doing that, big one, not doing that. Not the news, I don't watch the news at all. Nothing, no news at all. That's a big one. I'm not, you know, and hanging out with judgmental peeps or people that may be a bit negative or whatever it is. People, you know, don't get me wrong, everyone's on their own journey, but not doing that, that's another big knot, you know. So I had to look at the knots first.
Yeah.
And step away from that.
Emptying the cup.
Yeah, so true. That's right. And now back to it, meditation, like, it's game changer. Like, it is. Like, the most, obviously, the spiritual, successful, happiest people in the world meditate, right? So there's something behind it, you know. And so the meditation for me, yoga is something I picked up in the past 2 years. That was another sort of big piece of the spiritual puzzle. My reading, I read every day. I write most days. What else am I doing? Exit my gym as well. I do a lot of body weight stuff. I'm at the park outside, do a lot of grounding. I would go for walks every day. So all the simple stuff. Like, it's simple. It's not like rocket science. It's all simple stuff, you know. And
that's why it's so good too. It's crazy. It's like
free. It's all free. Most of it is anyway. Yeah, but you obviously got to invest in your programs and stuff like that. Like, I'm always doing programs. I'm spending most of my money spent on my growth. Don't get me wrong, but when you learn the stuff and you can implement it yourself, then it's priceless.
And I think what's really important about what you're saying there, look, is that, you know, because a lot of the time we're trying to fill that cup even more, and so it doesn't sink in, you know, because we've got those old habits and old programs that just really keep dictating where we end up. So we can keep putting stuff in, but as you said, unless we kind of stop and remove that, empty the cup, I think when we start to empty that cup, we can then, you know, from the Vedic philosophy, they call it a state of being able to follow a bit more charm. You know, once we come into that quieter place, because we've emptied it, we get that little access to, well, what feels right. You know, what's right for me? And we start moving more in that direction. So therefore, when we start putting stuff back in the cup, it's much more in line and attuned with that true north that we sort of touched on before. So it seems like to be that's what, you know, you've done. And then removing some of those, you know, very distractive aspects of life, which can, like TV and news and so on, that I'm not saying it's all bad, but certainly doesn't help, because, you know, just, you think, if we think about, we're nothing but energy, we're just agitating our own energy by continually watching that sort of stuff. So what would you say would be your top reads for someone that's in a position that's looking to maybe make change and is finding it challenging, you know, other than stop watching TV, stop doing that sort of stuff? You know, what can they, what would you recommend they can start to sort of bite into that has had a profound impact on you?
In books, you mean?
Books or podcasts or?
Yeah. The book, The Power of Now and The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, whatever it is.
Tolle, yeah.
The Power of Now and A New Earth by him. Like, it's, if you're starting off in your spiritual journey, maybe go something a little bit softer first up. Another one, which was a sort of nice intro for me, was A Monk Who Sold His Ferrari by Robin Sharma. It's got storyline, but with some deep sort of deep insight there as well. Conversations with God.
Yeah.
Conversations with God's another big one. And, you know, I'm not a religious guy. I'm a spiritual mofo, and so I sort of shied away from Conversation with God for a while. Everyone's like, you got to read it. And I'm like, I don't, you know, like, I had this this old belief of God and religion and all this. It's really conversations with God, the universe, yourself, you know, and that was a big one. The way of the superior man is, that was the biggest, lately that's the biggest game-changing like paradigm shift I've had is the way of the superior man, because I'm still, you know, looking to, I still have things in my life that I need to improve on, obviously. And the biggest one for me is like the growth that I'm sort of committed to now is my associations to the love relationships and the dating world or whatever it is, because talk about some unlearning some stuff that I need to unlearn on that, you know. Just looking back at, you know, certain things said by certain influential people in my life about women, about relationships, about what, like, and that's deep, that's in there, you know. And although I don't consciously believe that, and I don't know why in the world, but I've found it comes out in different ways in relationships that I've been in. I self-sabotage, and so it's for myself, my big growth now is around love, relationships, heart opening, right? So, and becoming, you know, in tune with that and understanding that. But as well, like I said, it's a lot of unlearnings that I have to do as well. So, but the way of the superior man for guys, girls, whatever, everything in between.
I love that book. I love that book. Yeah.
But from your side of things, like why did you love that book?
The one thing that really resonated with me was understanding that when men are fulfilling their purpose and are in that space where they put that as priority, then they can give back in a relationship. When they have that inner contentedness, number one, then they can, you know, do what needs to be done within a relationship to take care of those other aspects. So that, yeah. And I think that's also works in reverse. I think women also need to have that self-love and pure inner contentedness and love for self and self-worth before they can give back to a relationship, rather than seek a relationship to, you know, fill the cup where it's not fulfilled within. So.
Well said. I love that. Yes, 100%. Exactly. It is a great book. Have you read it, Rich?
I started to, and for whatever reason at the time, it didn't grab me right in. I've still got it there, and that happens with a lot of books. Sometimes I pick them up and it's just like, it's not calling me right now.
Yeah.
And it can be either to do with, you know, all the other stuff I've got going on, and but no, it sparked my interest. I did read stuff like that, and I remember, you know, agreeing with a lot of that. But again, I just didn't get, you know, how sometimes you just get hooked into books.
Oh, for sure. Different avenues, different books, different subjects, for sure.
And actually, for a long time, I actually stopped reading as well. And I think that was around that period where, you know, I just sort of, you know, because sometimes you can put so much in as well, and, and you can start looking. You know, I think we arrive at a point where it's like, okay, you know, what else am I looking for here now? You know, so I went for a period of many years where it's like, you know, I'm kind of done. I'm done on podcasts. I'm done on reading. I'm done on all this. And I just need that space to kind of let it all just sort of, you know, let your own sort of things start to flourish and let your own being start to flourish. But in saying that now, I'm kind of come full circle again. And now I'm back, you know, because I think for a while my ego was just sort of, you know, challenging some things and some thoughts. So I was just like, okay, cool. I'm just going to go and be, and I'd write a lot and I'd do a lot of my own stuff, but in terms of reading, that kind of took a back seat. But it's funny now, right back into that, you know, learning and sort of also a lot of science-based stuff as well, like nervous system stuff. So I think it's just those cyclical patterns, and I find my life has always been a lot about my own cycles and tuning into that and allowing them when they come and go. So it's funny because even like that concept we're talking about there, I remember when I first went to Vipassana, if you heard like the 10-day, it's kind of like the Street Fighter version of meditation. you beat the shit out of yourself for 10 days.
But that's the big boss, right?
That's the big boss, man. I remember like going to the guy that's talking about that whole concept of it, and that was the first time I'd heard that. And similar to what you were saying before, Carly, about how a lot of us, you know, we're projecting love. I love you so much, and that. But I remember the Gonka saying that, you know, you cannot love another human being, you know, unless you love yourself, you know. And even then, we're just we're meeting love in that space. And if we're sort of searching for it within other people, you know, it often falls a lot short, which again sounds similar to that concept of the way of the superior man, that, you know, come back to purpose, come back to being, operate out of your own beautiful space. And then those that you attract and meet will hopefully be in there. And some things, I think it's also put like that, sometimes even in those evolutionary things with relationships, another concept in the Vedas, Luke, is that there's a forces that, and this is all, the Vedas is a lot about what's happening in nature. You know, if it's not in nature, you know, it won't be involved with the Vedic philosophy, and it's creation, destruction, and evolution. And even in relationship purposes, and we see it in nature itself, like everything goes through those stages, like creation, you know, where things are blossoming and blooming and it's wonderful. And then if it's worth the highest evolution, you go into a maintenance stage where it's no longer like new and exciting and like, you know, oh my God, the kind of honeymoon's over. But if it's still for our evolution, we go into sort of maintenance, sort of, yeah, let's maintain this. This is worthwhile. And then there's an aspect called destruction, you know, or removal of irrelevancies, that it will get to that point where this is no longer for my highest evolution. And so that relationship won't flourish and it'll go into that destruction mode. But and so it's such a fascinating thing to sort of, when we look at those aspects of personality and traits, that sometimes we pick up things to help us move through those own cycles. And we look at that in ourselves, like those different patterns of creation, evolution, destruction. So sometimes when things are breaking down, it's sometimes for, again, the better interest of our higher self and to keep moving forward. I love that. So it is pretty cool. So if you look at it, some of the wisdom, from the, I probably didn't do that quite the amount of justice it deserves, but when you look at a lot of the philosophies, it's amazing. It's so amazing. So with your work you're doing now, what brings you that most, you know, joy? Because I've seen you doing lots of stuff with schools, lots of stuff with corporates. Where do you really, like, where do you, like, light up?
Well, I light up all of it. I love being there and connecting with the audience. I suppose the ones that I make the strongest connection with, you know, all of them, really, I really love all of it. The high school students, I was going to say the high school students, but my primary school peeps, I love it as well. The connection there, I actually spoke to a lady the other day at a bookstore. I was just speaking to this lady at a bookstore and we were talking about life, whatever, and she was asking me about speaking at prisons, and she goes, oh, how is it speaking at prisons? Like, people sort of like, oh, how is it's the most the strongest connection, I suppose. It's the least less ego, you know, because they've, I know it sounds, but it is, because they're there, it's just them, you know. They're obviously they've got their certain plays out in the yard or whatever, but it's just them, and they're the least judgmental, because and I get the great, like, the strong connection with those guys as well, because, you know, it's one wrong choice from being there. It's just one. I spoke at a juvenile detention late last year, and afterwards I spoke to this young guy. He asked a question at the end, and he came up after me, and it was just, wow, like, just a beautiful, like a kid, like a 17-year-old kid, beautiful, beautiful soul, right? And then when he left, I was speaking to the guard, and the guard said, yeah, he's got another 4 years, I think it is. And I said, what happened? He was just mucking around with his friends, got in a car, went up the gutter and killed a kid, accidentally killed a kid, right? Oh. And it's just a beautiful young soul that made a stupid mistake, crushed that, and now he's in there. So how can, like, again, it can happen with any of us, one little wrong mistake. So how can I judge these guys? They've obviously there's certain non-negotiables, 100%. Like, I'm not excusing certain things, but some of them just made the odd mistake and stuff. Yeah. So I'm not. Sorry, Carly?
Oh, I agree. And I think well done for going into that space and teaching, because there's not a lot of support in there, you know, for rehabilitation. I have a friend that also ended up in prison for 6 years. So I used to go in and visit, and you know, that was off the back of something that he did 15, 20 years prior that was, you know, not his greatest decision. But it caught up with him, and, you know, there was no, you know, I would sit in there and I was trying to teach him to meditate and support him through those years, but there was no support in there, you know, so to go in there with such an... I can't hear you, Luke. Sorry, I don't know if it's...
Sorry, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Your mic's right, dipping in and out. But to go in there with such an open mind and so much love and support and be able to give back in that space, because, yeah, it's not all the same story in there, you know?
Yeah, it's true. Well said. Very true. Easy question. Just all the audience, like, I get different things. Like, the primary school, when I first starting speaking at primary schools, I was like, you know, obviously PG my story, I have to do that, but I was like, is my content going to be too bad? I PG'd a little bit, but the primary school students are more like, people don't give them enough credit for how aware and how open and how intuitive they are. Because they're, those guys blow my mind with some of the questions and insight afterwards. So yeah, all audiences have their own little sort of unique sort of thing, but I just love speaking and connecting.
How do you think you would have gone sitting down next to the, a drunk 17-year-old, 130-kilo Luke talking now to him, like, would he have been going, I hear you, man? Or
having my cool stories gives me a good in. And I see a lot of the students who I used to be, whatever, and I get messages from these guys online and stuff, and who I was back then, I was a heavy fighter on the street and carried on and hurt some people, I was still like a well-mannered young man around certain people, do you know what I mean? So I still had my manners and respect for people. So who knows? Maybe I wasn't supposed to meet a man like me back then for me to go through the quest and journey I've been through, you know? So who knows? It's an interesting concept, but I don't know. He would have listened for sure. Would have still made mistakes 100% afterwards. But all these lessons, all these teachings, they're just all little seeds that are planted along the way, and we've got to spread them ourselves, I suppose.
The little breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
following the trail. Well, maybe, well, I guess we'll get close to wrapping up. So what would you say would be, you know, other than what we touched on, you know, advice for people to cultivate a happy mind, to start, you know, living from that place of authenticity? What advice would you give?
Commit firstly of going on that, you know, that journey of self-discovery or whatever. It's not about finding yourself because you're already yourself. It's just getting rid of what's not you. So really become intuitive and aware of your feelings, your emotions, you know, how you feel after hanging out with certain people, how you feel after watching certain things, how you feel and your mind after being on your phone for so long, or what's causing the angst, what's causing the conditioning, what's causing that shit, you know? And becoming aware of that is the first step towards breaking free of it. So that's the very first step, is becoming aware of that and get rid of what's not you, and understanding that even foods, even sugars, even, you know, what is it in your life that's stuffing with you? What in your life it's not benefiting your emotional and mental state? What is it? Because if you're not happy or you don't have your happy mind, there's shit that you're doing that's affecting it.
Yeah.
So become aware of that first, and then you can start playing around and getting into your meditation and doing, but don't get me wrong, you can do it all at once, but for sure, but go on that journey of self-discovery first.
Identify the triggers, huh? Yeah. Love it.
What do you think? What do you think? What do you guys think is the first step?
Carly, you can.
Carly, let's go. Put it back on you guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's trusting in yourself. And then, you know, I think meditation is a big part of helping you, you know, implement that, and it'll help you become aware of what that stuff is as well. But, you know, chicken or the egg, whatever you feel drawn to, you know, often we're doing all of the stuff, and then one day something just wakes us up to, I've got to stop this. So, you know, but I certainly think meditation is a big part of the unraveling of who you are and getting back to self. And everything that you said, Luke, you know, just feeling into everything, just observing that fine layer of feeling, do I enjoy being around that person? Is this person good for my growth? Do I actually enjoy this? And just being really authentic, really authentically you. What about you, Rich?
Yeah, look, it's probably looking back through my journey, you know, because it's probably, I think it's very similar to what you guys both said. It's the tuning into the feelings as the compass, you know, which exactly what you said there, you know, and but even going beneath that, what's that little voice inside? Where's it leading you to? Because often if it is correct, it is right. You know, and that it can be hard to sort of tune into that, you know, because I said it can lead you. I wrote something yesterday just about love, actually, and you know, it was and again, being a guy, you know, Luke, I also share a bit of a Street Fighter story. I used to play the game Street Fighter a lot, but that's about where it's
dickhead.
That was a great game. Might have been before your time. But you know, it was to step out into that state when you're a young guy can be quite challenging. But I wrote that love, it will push us out of our comfort zone. It'll lead us to go against those ego mind stuff, you know, because the love inside is going, this isn't you, stop it, don't do it. But to break those patterns, you know, you've got to step out of your comfort zone. So that takes a bit of confidence and bravery in self. And, you know, I think that can really, like, we have to sometimes leave our environments as well, you know, to step out of that. And that can be where that challenge can really come in, because that inner voice goes, this isn't you. But if you don't have any other option, or you've never really seen any other option, how you take that step. So I think listening to that and then just trusting in that voice comes from a deeper part of self. And, you know, those seeds are planted there for a reason, and just take them, be brave, like what you did, mate, and follow them. And it might mean that you have to change friends, might mean you have to stop watching TV and all that sort of stuff. But I think listen and be brave. Follow heart.
Nice.
Well said, guys. Both you guys, great addition. Beautiful.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Well, that's been an absolutely awesome chat, man. And so crazy and so inspiring. And, you know, I just love the, you know, and I think I just also want to highlight that although your story is kind of extreme, that people, no matter what their own story is, they might not have been through those extremes, but we all have those individual same challenges, just with different faces and different hats, you know. So whilst yours was, you know, an awesome, amazing story, someone might not be sitting back there going, oh, they might just be lonely and anxious and isolated and sad, you know, yet their story is equally as relevant, equally as powerful. And just again, follow those same stories that Luke was saying, that tune into those feelings, because where you're sitting doesn't necessarily mean it's where you have to be.
That's right. Well said.
And I think you've really painted a beautiful picture there, man. You've turned into obviously a really, not turned into, but always were an incredibly beautiful, wonderful human being. And
thank you. Feelings mutual, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah. And look forward to, you know, meeting again in person. And yeah, it's been inspiring.
You're on the coast, right? You're in Queensland, yeah?
We're just currently, we are waiting to move. We've bought 10 acres in Crumbin Valley, but yeah, we've just been on a long road to get there. So it's been about 10 months. So it still hasn't sort of settled through council, but it should be, you know, in the next sort of 3-4 months, we should be up there, but currently just in northern New South Wales. So okay, beautiful. Another beautiful, just overlooking a lovely Mount Warning over there.
That's
it, mate. It's pretty cool. So Carly, you want any comments to wrap up at all?
No, thank you for the beautiful share, Luke. It was such a great time with you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for sharing and being authentic.
You're doing great things. Thank you. And it's beautiful to be a part of what you guys are doing. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, man, pleasure.
It. Wish you all peace of mind.
Likewise, man. You have a wonderful day, and look forward to connecting.
100%. See you guys.
Alrighty, catch you, man.
Thanks.